This is podcast number 174 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today come celebrate Libraries of Hope's 10th birthday with me. When mothers get together, we love to share our labor and delivery stories, don't we? Well, it was exactly 10 years ago this month that Libraries of Hope was officially born, or at least announced to the world. Some of you were there at the very beginning, and your kids are already grown. Maybe some of them have children of their own. So much can happen in just 10 years. So I hope you'll indulge me in a little trip down memory lane as I share a few labor and delivery stories and consider some lessons learned along the way that apply to all of us because you are part of the story as well. The idea of Libraries of Hope had been conceived several years before, and it had been forming close to my heart, but there came a day when I wanted to make a formal announcement and introduce Libraries of Hope to the public. So I rented a hotel room for June 12, 2009, and sent out 300 invitations to friends. About 25 people came. I told them my vision and my dreams and talked about the power of stories in our lives. By that point, I'd gathered most of the stories for the first series, the Freedom Series, which was American History Stories. But all I could show them were sample covers. At that time, there was no print-on-demand technology. To get the price down to any reasonable amount required that we print at least 1,000 copies. And we had no money. The idea came to me to offer them on a subscription basis and release one title a month. I thought to set a $15 a book price, and I left my little Libraries of Hope launch with 25 subscriptions in hand. Within a few days, my husband and I set off for Virginia. A series of events had left us destitute and without a home. A few years earlier, it had taken us 6 26-foot trucks crammed full to move our stuff from Colorado to Utah. Now, after selling everything we could, what we needed fit into a small trailer we towed across country behind our car. In a short amount of time, I had gone from living in a beautiful 6,000-square-foot home in a neighborhood of million-dollar homes to now setting our bed on a concrete floor in my daughter's unfinished basement in Virginia. I woke up to insulation hanging from the ceiling and looked at cinder block walls surrounded by storage boxes. But we had nowhere else to go. We had intended to only stay for a few months. My daughter's husband had joined the army and would be away at boot camp when their third baby was due to arrive. So we were happy to go be there with her. When he deployed for another year, we stayed. They have long ago moved away, but we're still here. Only I don't live in the basement anymore. And I have most certainly fallen in love with Virginia. We live out in the beautiful countryside where I can sit on the porch and listen to the birds and watch the fireflies. I wasn't sad, really. I loved being with my little grandchildren and my daughter. The feeling that came to me was, good, now that we have all that stuff out of your life, let's get to work. And both my husband and I put our hearts and souls into growing Libraries of Hope. Every other path for us had been hedged up. My first problem at hand was I had 25 subscription orders and only needed 975 more to be able to fill them. Then one day I was searching for something and an ad or an article caught my eye and led me to a printing company that specialized in short runs. They were just south of us. We drove down and talked to them. I explained I wanted to offer hardcover dust-jacketed books. They said they could do it for just less than $15 each, and the minimum order was 25. That's exactly what I had, and we were on our way and were able to finish the Freedom Series. At this time, Glenn Beck was soaring in popularity. Everyone kept telling me I needed to get hold of him and show him my books. I started watching his show, and he pled with parents to teach their children American history stories, especially from books written before 1923. He said we need to teach them the principles of liberty and was pushing the 5,000-year leap, which presented 28 principles, all of which I knew were woven into the stories in my books. We had exactly what he was talking about. One day when I was so discouraged, I knelt down in the basement and prayed. What were we doing? Were all these sacrifices worth it? Would these stories really make any difference? And the impression came to go upstairs and turn on the radio. Glenn Beck's program happened to be on, and at that very moment he said, "Stories will heal our nation." It made complete sense to get in touch with him, so I tried in every way I could possibly think of, but with no success. I had saved a set of books just for him, and I had them boxed up ready to go, but had no idea how to get them to him. Then the words came to my mind, "Marlene, I created the universe. Do you not believe that I can get these books into Glenn Beck's hands?" And I laughed at my lack of faith. Of course. That was simple for him. I looked up the general address and put them in the mail, trusting they would find their way. Some weeks went by and nothing happened. And then one night, I had a strong impression. "Marlene," these impressions always addressed me by name, "would you be willing to call into Glenn Beck's radio program tomorrow?" Nothing could have stricken more terror in my heart. I'm pretty sure I made it through my entire school career, from kindergarten to college graduation, without once raising my hand to ask or answer a question or make a comment in class. I lived in dread terror of saying something stupid. And the thought of going on a live national radio program with millions of listeners and making a fool of myself was the worst possible thing that could be asked of me. I just knew I was going to be the talk around the water cooler at work the next day. No, I would do anything but that. But I had promised I would do anything he asked of me. A promise is a promise. I took some comfort in the fact that I'd known a few people who had tried to call into his show without success. Some days he didn't even take callers. So the next morning, I tried to think of something to say and with trembling fingers dialed the number. My call was answered immediately. The screener said Glenn would be very interested in talking to me and to hold the line. I've listened to enough of his shows to know that he usually only takes a few calls a day, if that. But this particular day, he took calls for all 3 hours. I was watching the program on my computer screen with my headset on, literally in a death grip of fear. The screener occasionally came back to check that I was still there and told me that Glenn would still take my call. The hours were agonizing. I can't even describe to you how I felt. Finally, it was close to the end of the 3 hours, and if you've ever watched the program, sometimes Glenn will go into this low, soothing voice, which he did at this time, and these were the words spoken into my ears, "God has not forgotten you." And the program was over. My husband asked if I was going to try again the next day, and I said, "Are you crazy? I kept my promise. It wasn't for the lack of trying, and I didn't particularly feel like I needed to try again." A few weeks later, I got a phone call. "Hi, is this Marlene Peterson? This is Natasha. I'm Glenn Beck's producer. He has become aware of your work, and he loves what you're doing, and he was wondering if you would send him 2 sets of your Freedom series." I can't help but wonder if I came to his attention during that radio program. I'll never know. But I learned later that he had warehouses packed with products that people were sending him with the hopes he would endorse them on his show. And here he was calling me and asking me to send him my product. I was awestruck and so quick to give credit to where credit was due. Lord, thank you. I had to box up my own set and piece together another set for my daughters, because that's all I had. I was given special instructions how to send it so it would get to him. So I kept watching his show. Nothing happened. And then, about a week later, a strange course of events had brought me to a large beach house in Florida, where I was in a room with about 12 to 15 women. On my right was Lori Parker, She had called into Glenn's program and overnight had gathered over 80,000 moms, and as a mom was born. I had previously tried to get hold of her without success, and here she was, sitting next to me. We've since become good friends. On the other side of the couch was Yvonne Donnelly, who was heading up Glenn's 912 project that had over 1 million participants. Right after I shared my books with the group, Yvonne's phone rang. Oh, hi, Glenn. You know those books you just got from Marlene Peterson? The Freedom Series? Yeah. She's sitting right here on the couch next to me. I couldn't hear what he was saying, but she cupped the phone and said, he loves them. And she left the room to finish her call. My mind was reeling. This was impossible. This was a miracle. So surreal. Glenn Beck loved my books. I was sure he would say something. I kept watching the program. Nothing happened. A couple of weeks later, Yvonne texted me a picture. She was in Glenn's New York apartment, and there were my books in a place of honor on a table with bookends. I kept hearing him say, you need to get stories like these into your children. I knew he had the books and loved them. Why wasn't he telling people about them? Finally, I said, Lord, I don't understand. And I could almost feel the smile behind it. Marlene, that was your idea, not mine. And I laughed aloud again. It was my idea. He had kept his promise. He got the books into Glenn's hands, which evidently is a miracle right up there with parting the Red Sea. But that was not his idea. That was mine. And with my perspective today, I am 1 million times grateful that Glenn did not promote those books at that time. Had he done that, most of what followed, which is infinitely more important in my estimation, would likely never have happened. I came away from that experience with greater trust in the Lord, but more importantly, a firmer commitment to quit trying to figure everything out. Instead, I've tried to live by daily asking, today, what wouldst thou have me do? Where wouldst thou have me go? What wouldst thou have me say? And I continue to watch his hands perform wonders. After the Freedom Series, I had several more series in mind. I loved the stories I was finding and gathering, and I was so anxious to find a way to share them with families. But I couldn't continue doing it the way we were doing. I had gathered stories for at least 5 dozen more books, and I still only had a handful of subscribers. Then I was given an invitation to speak at a homeschool conference in Fredericksburg and felt to go. At the last minute, they asked if I would do a vendor class. I wasn't even sure what that was. Only 3 ladies came to it, and I talked about the books, but they seemed disinterested. Afterwards, one of the women pulled me aside and said that she had no idea why she came to my little presentation. She came from a family of storytellers and didn't feel a shortage of stories in her life, but she felt she should sit in on the class. And as she sat there, she had the strongest impression to connect me with the man she knew who was a high-power business consultant. I contacted him, and he was very cordial and nice, but way out of my league. I couldn't figure out what we needed to talk about. And then he casually mentioned a book he had just finished writing, and somewhere in the course of conversation, he told me about a fairly new company called CreateSpace that printed books on demand. I immediately checked them out. This was a turning point for us. They could print a single book at less than the cost we had been quoted for printing 1,000 books, and they would print one title at a time. The downside was I had to give up my beautiful hardcover, dust-jacketed books and could only offer softcover, but the gate was open to move forward, and I was so grateful. We could now offer books as fast as we could get them formatted. Now more ideas kept coming, and we would work long 18-hour days to try and keep up, and opportunities to begin to spread a message started dropping in my lap. I noticed the Utah governor's first lady was sponsoring a giant family conference at the Salt Palace when I was going to be in town, and I felt the nudge to offer to speak, which I really didn't expect to be accepted. I was a nobody, and there were a lot of very recognizable speakers. But the invitation was extended to me, and I spoke again of the power of stories in our lives. Out of 185 presenters, it was my picture that was posted on the front page of the Deseret News, and my presentation about stories was the featured talk. From that, I was invited to meet with an executive at the KSL Studios who was interested in filming me in some segments about storytelling that would reach families around the world in a program they were developing. It didn't work out for different reasons, but I was stunned at the attention. Another time, just 2 weeks before the World Congress of Family was to be held for the first time in the United States, I got a call. A presenter was unable to make it. Would I fill in for him? He was someone I had followed for years and was a well-respected man. I couldn't possibly fill his shoes. I was told it needed to be a well-crafted 18-minute speech that would be videotaped and given a worldwide distribution. No pressure. I would be presenting to the entire group, over 4,000 delegates from all over the world. With all my heart, I wanted to say, "Are you kidding me?" But that gentle voice inside said, "Go, I'll be with you." The message I was to deliver was written on my heart, but I was quaking in my shoes. The night before I was to speak, I went to dinner with my family. My daughter has a Jeep, and my 94-year-old at the time mother was with us, so she needed the front seat, which meant I had to climb into the back. Somehow in the climb, I twisted my body the wrong way and pinched my sciatic nerve. At least I think that's what it was. All I know is I was in agony and couldn't move without excruciating pain. I kept thinking the pain would go away, but it got worse. I didn't know what I was going to do. There were many prayers that night. I tossed and turned all night in pain and tried to figure out how I was going to manage this. The setup was that I was to be part of a 5-person panel. They had big, soft chairs on this huge stage that, as we were presented one at a time, we would walk out on the stage and sit in one of these chairs and wait our turn to speak. I couldn't imagine how I was going to sit down without help, and far worse, how could I possibly pull myself out of that chair? I thought, should we get a wheelchair? Should I just tell them I'll stand off stage until it's my turn to speak? I will say the pain crowded out my fear to a large extent. And the feeling that came to me in the night was, trust me. So I got up and got ready, very, very slowly, all the time not knowing what I was going to do. I was speaking in the first session of the morning, and then the second I stepped outside of my hotel room, the pain went away, completely. I was rushed backstage and got there just as they were about to announce us. Our panel leader was a distinguished man from Poland who had previously hosted the conference in his country. There was an Orthodox priest, a man who had held a high position in the government of the Philippines, and a man who had a high position in the CIA, and then me. The Sesame Street song kept running through my head. One of these things is not like the other. It didn't boost my confidence when, the day before, the man who had invited me to speak told me that the chairman of the event had reached out to him and said, "What does the power of stories have to do with this Congress? You need to find a new speaker." I was on board with that. He assured her all would be well. So I stood and delivered the message that was written on my heart, and oh my goodness, I watched its message resonate in hearts. Everywhere I went for the next 3 days, people surrounded me and told me how deeply the message had moved them. I know where that credit goes. Saturday morning, when I was finally done with the final session that I took part in, the pain returned, and I suffered for a couple of more weeks. Maybe just in case I doubted the miracle, which, believe me, I never did. I think back to the time when Libraries of Hope was in its infancy, when I was asked what my business plan was, how I planned on marketing this, and my reply was always the same: I have no plan. But the feeling planted in my heart, as I have frequently shared, is that the Lord was preparing a network of mothers who, when they heard the messages, they would resonate in their hearts and they would be drawn to the work. If I had millions of dollars and could have hired New York's finest marketing agency, they could never have gathered the wonderful families that have been quietly gathering from all over the world to a message of the influence of a mother and the need to cultivate our hearts through the arts. One time I expressed frustration to the Lord. This work would be so much easier if I had money, and the thought immediately came to my mind. If you had money, you would do it your way. I need you to do it my way. And he continues to teach me his way is always better, and he has provided for our needs. Libraries of Hope has never been about selling books. It has always been about building reservoirs of stories that are broad and deep in the hearts of our children. I don't know all that lies ahead in the future of Libraries of Hope, but I do know there are likely wonderful surprises. There's a great orchestrator, and we are all part of his grand orchestra. Some of you will be the trumpet section. Others will play sweet melodies on your violins. I always hope I get to pluck a few harp strings. I believe he will perform miracles in your lives and help you do exactly what you need to do. Sometimes I get little glimpses. I have a sense of a safety net lying over the land, unknown to the world, but made up of homes like yours where goodness and beauty are being safeguarded in the hearts of the coming generations. Sometimes I worry there are so few of us, and I'm always reminded that a little yeast raises the whole loaf of bread. But I'm also reminded how quickly an idea can spread. If you plant the seed of an idea in just two friends who live in another town or another state or even another country, and those two friends share it with two friends and so forth, it's amazing how quickly a safety net can grow. I think the world is headed for a necessary winter, but today's harvest will see us through until spring, when new green shoots will appear and beauty will rise from the ashes. That's not a gloomy thought. I am filled with a brightness of hope. Enough of memories. Time to get back to work. Happy 10th birthday, Libraries of Hope. I can hardly wait to see what's in store for you. I can hardly wait to see what's in store for all of us. Bye-bye. See you next time.